You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, September 21st, 2017.
Everyone is invited to read a segment of the poem. So what we will do is we will score a poem, divide it into sections, so that everyone has an opportunity to read it in a round.
Maria Eliza Hamilton is a healer, a poet, and a Black Studies practitioner. Hamilton is the co-director of a month-long series of readings and discussions on culture, trauma, and healing. Hamilton joins Big Talk host Michael Glab later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks your friends and neighbors, what's the best thing about Bloomington? But first, these local headlines.
The Bloomington Solidarity Network canceled a series of pickets against Parker Real Estate Management today due to alleged police interference. The Bloomington Solidarity Network, a self-described volunteer network of working people who defend each other through collective action, is protesting Parker Real Estate's ongoing lawsuit against Kelly Saunders. That lawsuit alleges that Saunders owes the real estate management company over $5,000 in back rent and utilities. Bloomington Solidarity Network advocate Adam Scouten says that Saunders shouldn't owe Parker Real Estate Management Company that money because she'd already moved out of her apartment into her Habitat for Humanity home.
In her case, she signed a lease with Parker Real Estate but was also accepted the Habitat for Humanity program. So informed them that she would likely have to leave this lease early and would have to negotiate some way to get out of it so that she could move into her new home. And that was acknowledged by Parker Real Estate. And when the time came that she was to move into her new home, she informed them. They made her sign a document that was intent to leave early, make her pay $450, and also help find a new tenant. She signed that document and paid the money, but no real effort was made on their part to try to find a new tenant for this lease. And what happened was they continued to charge her rent and utilities for the remainder of the lease, even after she moved out and into her new Habitat house. So they are suing her now for all of the back rent and the utilities for a place she wasn't even staying in.
Scouten says the Solidarity Network is demanding that Parker Real Estate Management drop their lawsuit over back rent against Saunders. Scouten says the group's picketing against Parker Real Estate Management has been disrupted by Bloomington Police.
Undoubtedly, Parker calls them. This was the third time that we have picketed their office. Every time they call the police almost every day. And the last two pickets, which are always week long, the police will come out. They have said that we have the right to do whatever we're doing as long as we don't step on Parker's property. And that has been what we've done consistently, even up until now. But now the police and the director of the Board of Public Works came out and said that we cannot have a megaphone, we couldn't have canopies, which were holding up our banners, claiming that they were blocking the sidewalk, which we have video evidence of police officers saying that they do not block the sidewalk, and saying that we could basically not be on the sidewalk at all holding a banner. And we adjusted yesterday and had a banner hung on the back of one of our vehicles. They said we could not do that because it was covering the license plate and they would tow the vehicle, and said that they were going to cite us if they came back. And undoubtedly they will be back because they come every time Parker calls.
Scouten says employees of Parker Real Estate Management have told the police that Solidarity Network protesters have trespassed, a claim that he claims is, quote, patently false.
Well, the other day when the director of Public Works came out, he tried to mask the fact that he was called out there by a different city institution, which was Economic Sustainable Development. I'll just put it this way. There are people who are professionally linked to Parker and their legal and financial representation and to important city commissions and posts, and that all these people know each other and talk to each other and are certainly aware of our demonstrations against Parker Real Estate.
Scouten says the group is getting more members to protest against the real estate management company on Saturday at noon. During a phone call that Parker Real Estate Management declined permission to record, the company stated, quote, under advisement from our counsel, claims being made by the Bloomington Solidarity Network are the subject of litigation. Therefore, Parker Management cannot comment further, end quote.
The city of Bloomington is working to expand the city's network of multipurpose trails. In their Tuesday meeting, the Bloomington Board of Public Works approved a coordination contract with the Indiana Department of Transportation for the extension of the Beeline Trail. Currently, the three-mile-long trail runs from North Adams Street through the downtown area to the north side of Country Club Drive. Project engineer Neil Copper says the extension will take the trail farther north.
So this is a new project before the board. It would extend the Beeline Trail from its existing terminus at Adams Street to connect up to multi-use path on 17th Street that, with a new overpass built over the future I-69, could then connect to the west side of Bloomington.
Copper says the project is being funded with $1 million in federal construction funds. The project is part of the larger Bloomington-Monroe County Metropolitan Planning Organization's Transportation Improvement Plan. Copper says engineering design work for the project will likely start next year. Construction is expected to begin in 2021. Senior project manager Roy Ayton received approval for a similar NDOT coordination contract to create a recreational path on Bloomington's southeast side.
This project will construct a multi-use path and trail that interconnects Southeast Park and Arden Drive, South High Street, Childs Elementary School, Southern Oaks Park, Roar Road, Sarah Road Multi-Use Path, Jackson Creek Middle School. The project is listed within the MPO TIP and programmed to use $2,123,403 in reimbursable federal funds. Design is scheduled to begin this year, and construction will begin in 2021.
The board also approved a $6,000 contract with the engineering firm Shrewsbury and Associates for design plans for a new sidewalk and pedestrian crossing on 10th Street near University Elementary School. A $76,000 consulting contract with HWC Engineering was also approved during the Board of Public Works meeting on Tuesday. That contract is for the installation of pedestrian safety features at intersections around town, including countdown timers, push buttons, curb ramps, and crosswalks.
The Bloomington Police Department is warning residents they've seen an increase in the numbers of thefts from vehicles recently. In a Facebook post, the department stated over the past week, the majority of the thefts occurred north of 10th Street in the neighborhoods surrounding the North College Avenue and North Walnut Corridor. The post stated that the majority of thefts were from unlocked vehicles, and the majority of the remaining vehicles had items of value in plain view. They're cautioning residents and motorists to lock their cars and to remove anything of value from the vehicle after parking.
Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Hall of Fame and Uncle Penn Days Festival has returned to Brown County. The festival, which has been around for four decades, began yesterday and ends Saturday. 2017 marks its 43rd year. The festival is named after Bill Monroe, the father of bluegrass, who invented the musical style in the late 1920s. Over 30 bands are billed to perform at Bill Monroe's Music Park and Campground in Brown County. Performers include the Boxcars, Flat Lonesome, Doyle Lawson, and Quicksilver. The venue will feature the induction of musician Tony Rice into the Bluegrass Hall of Fame.
The Cook Group is requesting a tax abatement from Monroe County in connection with its renovation of the former GE plant on North Curry Pike. Earlier this week, the Cook Group announced it had bought the former plant for $6.5 million. The former plant is located within the county's Westside Tax Increment Financing District, or TIF. Cook Group President Pete Yonkman says Cook provides more than 4,000 jobs to Monroe County and pays $2.7 million in property taxes. Yonkman said those numbers don't include Cook Pharmica. The Cook Group announced this week its sale of Cook Pharmica to New Jersey-based Catalent Incorporated for $950 million. Yonkman says some of the money from that sale will be invested in the GE plant, which he says will expand considerably Cook's operations.
We view it as sort of doubling down on Bloomington and in our home here in Bloomington. We have, in our global headquarters, we have just under 1 million square feet. And now with this facility, assuming it closes, we would add just over another 1 million square feet, about 800, almost 900,000 square feet too. So we view this as a long-term investment in the community and in Bloomington.
In its request for tax abatement at the plant site, Cook says its redevelopment of the property will be conducted in 4 to 5 stages over a period of 10 years. According to the application, Cook estimates it will invest more than $125 million in its redevelopment of the site. Yonkman says the Cook Group is outgrowing its existing facilities.
The reason that we need to expand is because our primary facility, we call Park 48, on the west side of town by this facility, we are out of space. We're out of space both in terms of office space, manufacturing space, and particularly parking spaces. We're just full. And so we had tried to look at other facilities, trying to move things out. It just doesn't work very well when you're trying to piecemeal projects. And so what we decided was, when we looked at this GE facility, it really creates a campus for us. It's going to allow us to transform our manufacturing, which we're in the process of doing already. Our existing manufacturing processes are relatively old. We've been manufacturing products the same way for 30 years, and we need to change that. And we're in the process of doing that. This is going to give us this is going to put rocket fuel behind that process to allow give us space to be able to do that. It's very hard to reorganize a manufacturing space while you're using it to build product. And so we need that space to purpose build.
Yonkman pitched the commission not just on the number of new jobs Cook expects to create, but also the variety.
And we also assume that the employee mix will be very similar to what we have today. So we have one of the great things about Cook is we have a range of opportunities for people, right? We have beginning positions for people who are just coming to the workforce all the way through highly skilled PhD level jobs. So we assume that mix will be the same.
Chair Barry Lesso explained the considerations before the commission.
We have two things in front of us. Number one is the tax abatement. That is the county council's responsibility, but ours is to determine if this will negatively impact our ability to do our work. This is not about necessarily the merits of it. This is about the mathematical impact. Is there a negative? The second piece would be the amount that we would be able to contribute to this project and make as Monroe County's investment towards this renovation, which would be a piece of what you would be able to do and a piece that you've decided to focus on the exterior, where we as a county are trying to ensure that we have that kind of that look in that area that's going to encourage other people to come into the community. So
Monroe County Attorney Jeff Cockrell confirmed Cook's redevelopment of the site fits with the intent of the Westside TIF. The commission voiced its approval for a 10-year tax abatement, plus taking out a $5 million bond to assist Cook, despite concerns of the financial impact it could have on projects the county already has in the pipeline.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at SmithvilleSecurity.com.
Maria Eliza Hamilton can trace her roots partly to the Yoruba culture of West Africa. Born in the Caribbean to a mother who was a nurse and a father who was an artist, she has combined both callings in her own life as she works as a healer, a poet, and a Black Studies practitioner. Hamilton, also known as Abagunde, is also co-director of a month-long series of readings and discussions designed to inspire thought and dialogue on culture, trauma, and healing here in Bloomington through mid-October. Hamilton, or Abagunde, joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest this week in the studio, a wonderful woman by the name of Maria Eliza Hamilton. But Maria Eliza Hamilton also has another name, but you know what? I'm going to let you say it, because I'm going to mess it up.
Good afternoon, Mike. Thank you for having me here. So my other name is Oshunbimpe Abegunde.
Why two names?
I have two names because the second names, Oshunbimpe Abegunde, were given to me in community by my elders in the Yoruba practicing community. So within other contexts, cultural contexts, particularly the arts and different communities, I may use my other name.
You are a visiting lecturer in the Indiana University Department of African American and African Diaspora Studies. And as a matter of fact, you were the first person to get a doctorate from that school. How did you wind up here in Bloomington?
I came because the department was open and the university was open to what it is that I wanted to study and research. So I come to university as a practicing poet, as a practicing community worker, after doing decades of work in Chicago and different places in the world. Mm-hmm. And my area of particular research is in memory, trauma, and healing, and particularly how ancestral memory impacts descendants of those who have suffered traumas or traumatic events, particularly related to slavery and the slave trade. I also wanted to do a creative dissertation, and the university, the department specifically offered that, and something that was beyond performance. Mm-hmm. And so they said, yes, they said, we will help you articulate that. And that is what my committee members did. And throughout my time and my tenure here, I've been able to provide a space for performance and to working with students who are interested in memory, trauma, and healing.
What's going on right now, we're right in the middle of it. There is a series of events, deep dialogue, readings on race and ethnicity. Now, that started on September 7th, and it's running through October 14th. It's workshops and readings. Can you explain more about this?
Yes. So, deep dialogue, readings on race and ethnicity is part of a sponsored program by Writers Guild at Bloomington.
Mm-hmm.
It is funded through an In Common grant that was given through the Indiana Humanities with funds from the National Endowment for the Humanities. These grant applications were made available after the last presidential election with the idea to provide funding for people in Indiana, organizations in Indiana, as part of the Race and Ethnicity Initiative from any age to create or to seed programs or projects that would give communities an opportunity to talk about race and ethnicity. So it sounded like a great deal and a great idea when I saw the application. I spoke with Patsy Ron, who's my co-project director and facilitator, to gauge her interest in it and whether or not Writers Guild would be interested in it, and everyone said yes. We opened with a panel on September 7th that brought together senior scholars and emerging scholars, so graduate students, to talk about the ways in which the humanities can help us understand the history and culture and life experiences of different cultures. In this case, we are reading the works of Jimmy Santiago Baca, Chicano Apache poet, Leanne Rorapaw, an Asian American poet who also earned her MFA here at IU.
Ah.
Layli Long Soldier, whose work we read this past Saturday, a Native American poet, and Claudia Rankin, an African American poet.
Now, it should be said that Leanne's work is going to be read this coming Saturday.
This coming Saturday.
Day after tomorrow. And then a week after would be Claudia Rankin, who's very well-received and well-selling book,
Citizen. Yes. We will be focusing on Citizen for that particular reading. And so the idea was to invite people to read works by authors they may not have read before, but across cultures, going beyond black and white, because the Bloomington community is very diverse, and we have different groups of people here. What is it like to read work by poets? Poetry is something that not everybody can get into or groove into.
Mm-hmm.
So we've chosen different types of poems even. So these books are all very, very different, but they share some similarities in helping us think about the everyday lives of the people we are reading about or the people about whom the authors are writing. The panel setting the stage for us, or the foundation for us, how do we use the humanities to have these conversations? Is it possible to read a poem, not to, as you go back to say, to understand or to be part of the experience, but just to be able to have a conversation about a life experience, and without interpreting that experience, without trying even to make sense out of it, but to engage in a very intentional, mindful process of listening to the work and hearing other people read the work.
There is work involved in listening to this. And I understand that there is a special way, a methodology for how these works are being read and going to be read. What is called the Lectio Divina, or from the Latin, divine reading.
Exactly.
There are four steps that people have to take to hear these poems. Should I tell them or should you?
Feel free. You,
well,
you do. Please.
Okay. The four steps, as I say, is you read the poem, you meditate, you pray, and then you contemplate. Interestingly, this is from the Benedictine tradition.
It is from the Benedictine tradition, and we have altered that a little bit,
uh-huh,
for a little bit, because keeping in mind that we have a very vast group, not everybody prays, not everybody is religious in that sense, but taking that very same process and using it in this way, and how we, everyone is invited to read a segment of the poem. So what we will do is we will score a poem, divide it into sections, uh-huh, so that everyone has an opportunity to read it in a round. After that, we ask people just to take a moment to think about what they've read and what they've heard, and then to respond with one word only. And then we continue reading depending on the length of the poem, and we respond again in one word. Then two people, sometimes more people, are invited to reread a segment for emphasis. And then after that, we open it up for dialogue. What is the poem actually saying to us? What did people feel? What are the particular areas that drew their attention? What does it tell us about, not necessarily the person writing, but about the narrator of the poem? Are there places that tell us about the history?
Abe Gunde is a pioneer. Maria Eliza Hamilton is a name others may know her as. Thank you for being on Big Talk.
Thank you for the invitation, and thank you so much for those questions and really going to the source of the work. I appreciate that.
That was Maria Eliza Hamilton speaking with Michael Glab on today's edition of Big Talk. You can hear that interview and others on our website, wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, what do you like most about Bloomington?
As a new crop of students settles in and local residents get once again used to the buzz around town that accompanies it, we have gone out into the streets and asked your friends and neighbors what they like best about Bloomington.
I'm part of a scholarship program that's like super diverse, and so I'm super involved with it, and I like that a lot. I also love the flower boxes by the square. I enjoy them daily.
I love the random reporters that come up to me and ask me about my favorite thing about Bloomington.
My favorite thing about Bloomington is all the little restaurants, the culture, the wonderful food and dining opportunities, and music venues, and the upcoming Lotus Festival. Well, that's like four favorite things.
I think the walkability, the sense of community that you get, I mean, it's so fortunate that we have the university here and you have a lot of cultural events that you would not otherwise have access to in a town this size.
It's the people, the diversity, the fact that you can, in this small Midwestern town, meet people from all over the world, every corner of the planet.
Well, since I live downtown, there's always stuff going on. You could just walk straight outside and there could be a parade or a food truck Friday right behind my place, and I never have to make plans because there's always something where I can just sort of jump on board with what's going on.
Favorite thing about Bloomington is when the school year ends and everyone leaves.
I like the size. I'm a really big fan of college towns. I came here from another college town, and I love the intermediate between like a really small town and a big city. I don't know, like there's just enough stuff to do and everybody's really friendly. And yeah.
I like the downtown and the size of it. It's not too small where you go crazy, but it's not a horribly big city. And it's got this like 5x5 block radius downtown, which is generally comfortable for most folks. Well, it's nice. You recognize people. It's good.
Right now it's the memories, because I graduated in 77, and walking around campus now, as my wife will attest here, it's a matter of reliving old things, kind of reframing some pain I had here by neutralizing it and reliving it in my imagination here to free myself of that. It's a little psychological work, but mostly it's fun. It's just seeing how things have changed, as well as the town. It's kind of doubled in population, gotten bigger, and that's always good and bad. But that part, it is that's what it is right now. It's a trip down memory lane.
The fact that the woods are really integrated into the campus. It's a really nice college town.
My favorite thing about Bloomington is that it's a small town, but still has a ton of variety and exciting things to do. Restaurants, arts, music, all of that here in a fun small town.
So my favorite thing about Bloomington is honestly just how friendly everyone is here, and how it's a big town, it's a big college town, but it's also a very small local town at the same time. So
yeah, my favorite's the food. You've got like really like good bar food, and then really nice like upscale stuff, and then all of 4th Street is amazing. And then definitely the different like types of people that you get to meet. With the university being here, you don't just have, you know, a few local people, you've got a good mix of just anyone and everyone.
People accept me as who I am. You know, I've got my multicolored tube top on with glitter, and I'm rewarded for it, and people are attracted to it. The thing that I really like is I get to see people I know all over town, and like ride my bike to the coffee shop and ride my bike to the comedy attic, and I just love the people.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Parvosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can subscribe to this show directly. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.